Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. On this week's show, we'll be talking about ultra-endurance sports, including running and biking. And boy, you'll hear some interesting stories of endurance.
We'll talk with a man who refers to himself as Blind Dave Healy. He's a motivational speaker who raises money for a variety of charities through his participation in ultra-endurance sporting events. Learn what it's like to train for and complete multiple consecutive daily marathons and or bicycle rides over 100 miles apiece, spanning counties, countries, or continents. But first to our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Dave Healy.
My philosophy on life, I suppose, is if I can't help, I'm not going to harm. But blindness is a terrible thing. But I can live with blindness. Don't want to, but I can. And I do. You know, there are people in this world who are far, far worse off than I am. And if I can show a little bit of help towards them and make their lives comfortable as I go through life, then so be it. And I reckon that, you know, if we were all to apply that, well, maybe the world would be a much better place.
As Dave says, I guess everything is relative. No matter how bad you think your situation might be, you can always find someone else whose situation might be even worse.
And one of the ways that he's living out that philosophy is that he's been doing these ultra-endurance events to raise money for charities that help out people who are in worse situations than he is, which is, you know, truly admirable.
It's all a matter of attitude.
Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll meet Dave Healy.
Can you introduce yourself to our listeners, Dave?
My name is Dave Healy, but most folks who do know me, sort of far and wide, know me as Blind Dave. A simple answer to it half the time is, why Blind Dave? Well, the name's Dave. I'm blind. Does that answer the question? And it normally brings a few titters and a few laughters, you know, but hey, why not? That word blind or blindness, people don't like to use it or didn't. And I like to sort of highlight the fact that blind and blindness, that, you know, there isn't a problem, is it? It isn't a disease. We're not going to chew you up and bite you and eat you, you know. It's simple. So it's trying to get that word back into the language.
What's the cause of your blindness?
Mine is a hereditary disease called retinitis pigmentosa, which I'm sure you're well aware of, as many folk around the world have got it. Born with the hereditary disease, from birth, I always suffered with night blindness. I've never ever seen at night. And then progressively, over the years, it's been a case of, you know, it's slowly developed, and there it was, gone. And as I say to the kids, born to be blind.
So did you develop your braille skills and navigational skills when you were young, or did you mostly go blind older in life?
Sort of through teenage years, you know, to sort of through the 20s. But although I was aware of what was happening to me, I know this might sound absolutely stupid, but I tried to hide blindness. I wouldn't admit to it. It's, you know, a funny thing being proud, isn't it? I used to get myself into all sorts of situations. And then after a sort of a little accident, which could have been a bigger accident, my mind was set and made up, and I sort of said, hang on a minute, you know, friends, family, people are right. I might not be here tomorrow if I carry on like this. So I simply accepted the fact that I had a problem, I had to deal with the problem, and with reference to the braille and sort of becoming used to it, I was probably middle, late 20s, took on virtually my first sort of white cane training. I went to a college for the blind, which was Queen Alexander College, of which I'm a governor now, and I enjoyed it. I did braille. I did computers to a degree. I did wood turning and woodworking. And from there on in, you know, I sort of accepted the fact that, hey, this is my life. I can't do nothing about it. So let's just enjoy it and make the best of.
So it sounds like you had some incident in your life that forced you to confront some of these issues.
It was a silly one, really. I mean, I wouldn't own up to what I couldn't see. I don't know, but in those days, I used to smoke. would you believe, I'd probably buy 40 fags a day or 60 fags in some instances, but it was my way of getting about, because what I'd do is I'd walk up the street, hear people, drop the cigarette deliberately. Oh, blow me, what's that? Listen for people to pass, stumbling, like trying to light another cigarette. And that was my cue then. People pass me, I'd move on. I'd probably buy 60 and smoke two. But then people, you know, started clicking onto the fact that I was doing silly things in the social sort of gathering. And Deb, the wife, you know, she clocked on and said, look, if you don't do something or you don't get some help, it's all right being proud, and pride is a funny old thing. But you're also, you know, with the way the world is, with vehicles and streets and people getting busy, I could end up dead. And I thought, you know, you got a point. But one night I went out and I was going up to the local pub. I'd been up there, I don't know how many times before. But what the local council had forgot to tell me was that they were effectively digging holes to put new traffic lights in. And I ended up at the bottom of one of these pits, 6 foot down, laying on my back, thinking, do you know, people have got a point. And that was basically what jogged me into sort of saying, I think I do seriously need to get some help here. That was when I kind of accepted what was happening to me, or had happened to me. And I thought, pride and proud is going to get me seriously hurt. So from that day, I never really looked back.
Wow, sounds like you got lucky that you had a minor accident and weren't seriously injured.
Yeah, and I mean, there was plenty of them, you know, but I think when people start worrying for you, and especially when family start worrying for you, I think it's time then you sort of say, okay, there's concern here, they're worried about, I better do something. So the very next day, I sort of got on the telephone and I started having white cane training, which developed into somebody suggesting that I go for a guide dog. Then it was suggested I go to Queen Alexander College, and all sorts of things started happening for me, you know. And my only regret in life is the fact that I never had a guide dog sooner.
So I gather these days you're a motivational speaker. You go all over the place giving talks.
Yeah, I enjoy it. A message through my life, you know, the mishaps, the things that went on, how I overcome the fact of blindness, the realization, and then through the challenges that I've done. And hopefully some of those people that are out there who are feeling a little sorry for themselves, it might be, oh, hang on a minute, eh? Should I really be feeling sorry for myself? I better get on with life and enjoy it, you know. So, yeah, I enjoy it. I enjoy it.
I understand you have a radio program also?
It's a radio station called Insight Radio, which is run by the RNIB, effectively, funded by the RNIB. And one of the presenters, believe it or not, we do a DIY with Blind Dave. So anything that I am doing, designing in the carpentry world, if we can do it in one show, or we do it over a few shows, you know, how to make a drawer, how to make a series of wardrobes, how to put a shelf up, anything that we effectively feel that a blind person is comfortable in doing. But the last few weeks, to be fair, we've done more chattering about the challenge that I recently did. And we've also had me and Simon over a couple of weeks, we put the worlds to rights as well. So it's a bit of a mix and match. But hey, you know, I've been doing it now for 4 years and they keep saying, you're still okay? And I go, I'm fine doing it.
So if you want to catch Dave doing his do-it-yourself program on Insight Radio, we'll have a link to that in the show notes for this show. And we also did show 1325 with Gil Johnson, who, while he doesn't do a radio show, he's got a vision-aware guide to home repair available on the web. So you can find a link to that in the show notes for this show as well.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is running and/or bicycling multiple extended distances to raise awareness and money for various good causes. I don't even remember how we first heard about you, but what first caught our attention was this multi-marathon, I don't even know what you call this, trip where you did 7 marathons on 7 continents in 7 consecutive days. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it was fantastic. I mean, I could talk all year about it, to be totally honest with you. It was just an unbelievable adventure. In 2003, I was listening to a national radio station, Sir Ranulph Fiennes. He'd just detailed how he'd become the first person in the world to run seven marathons, 7 days, seven continents. And I thought, hang on a minute, that sounds like a bit of an adventure. So I no sooner, with the help of Deb, we put a letter together. 6 weeks later, I was talking to Sir Ranulph Fiennes, and he said, able-bodied, you won't get no coverage. Blind, disabled, you will. He said, I'll help where I can. Anyway, 5 years went on, and in 2008, we had the logistics. I mean, there's only seven continents, but it was the cities that we was going to and where the planes was going to drop us. We had a sponsor, along with the charity, had then come on board. And with all the other little things that went on, through a talk that I did at a university, I came across a young lady who worked for a travel agent, and she came on board, and she was absolutely wonderful. And we plotted the course. It all kicked off on the 7th of April, 2008, a minute past midnight. We kicked off with GMT, did the Falkland Islands. I completed that marathon in 4 hours and 14 minutes. Weather conditions there were sort of around minus 2. On the morning of the 7th, we had to do 2 marathons.
You did 2 marathons in one day?
Yeah. We flew off the Falkland Islands at 20 past 1 a.m. local. We landed after 6 hours of flying and 2 hours of immigration, etc. At 9:30 a.m., the very, very safe same morning, we did the Rio leg, the South American leg. And then on that evening, the 7th, we then caught a plane and we flew to L.A. So on the 8th, we did a marathon around the world-famous Rose Bowl. And that was fantastic. Support there was brilliant. We lost a Wednesday because of the dateline. And Thursday, we ended up in Sydney, Australasia. And then from there, we flew on to the Friday to Dubai and Asia. On the Saturday, we were in Tunisia, Africa. And then we flew on to London on the 13th of April to the finish line in 5 hours and 20 minutes. And it was just one fantastic, adventurous week.
And along the way, he raised several hundred thousand pounds for guide dogs in the UK. And we'll have a link to the guide dogs website in the show notes as well. And in more recent events, he's raised additional money for them and for other charities. So I assume you had a sighted running partner. Did you have just one for all seven marathons, or did you have a whole fleet?
Well, we had a team of physios, logistic boys. We had a film crew that followed us. But at this particular marathon, I only had the one guide. We had two reserve guides if necessary. But I mean, I said to my mate at the time, you'll be a fool if you don't do all seven with me. Because, you know, it's one of those things you're never going to ever get the opportunity again. So he did. So, yeah, he did all seven with me, which was fantastic.
So in preparing for this interview, we've told your story to some of our friends, and the most common question people ask is, how do you recover from day to day and marathon to marathon? This takes a lot of energy.
It's in the training. Recovery is definitely key. And we had a fantastic physio that followed us around the world. And we also had the help and support from the Sports Institute Northern Ireland. Dr. Philip Glasgow, him and his team were absolutely fantastic. We went to Belfast a few times. But, I mean, it was all within the training. He put a program down for us, and it was 6 months of the most intensive training. We did endurance. We did track work. We did fast work. We did slow work. We did work in the gym. We did work in the swimming pool. We did a lot of running in the swimming pool, believe it or not, which took a lot of the pressure off the joints. We did core work. And obviously our hydration levels and nutrition was right, but it was all about recovery. And so through the 6 months, it was a case of, I don't know, a typical week could have been, we did a half marathon in the morning and then we had a little bit of rest. And then in the afternoon, we did another half marathon. The following day, we'd probably do a few fast laps on the track. Then the following day, we would do another half marathon followed by another one in the afternoon. You know, we'd do some pool work, some gym work. We'd have a rest day. And then it slowly built up where we were doing, say, 6 miles in the morning, 20 miles in an afternoon. We would then do 20 miles in the morning and we'd do some gym work. So it was all about trying to get the body to recover, which is the key point.
So the second most common question was, how much do you eat?
Somebody asked me a question yesterday in Barcelona, and they said, do you have any allergies? And I said, yes, an empty plate. But I do eat quite a lot, and especially when I'm training. And the beautiful thing of eating when you are training, you can get away with eating most things. You know, in the household itself with the children, I mean, it's very rare they have a McDonald's. I think I've probably had two McDonald's in my whole lifetime. But, I mean, we eat a lot of chicken, we eat a lot of fish, we do eat red meats, vegetables, pasta. Yes, I have some rubbish from time to time because I enjoy, you know, my treat each week is a bacon and egg butty with mushrooms. But like everything else, everything in moderation. But when you're training as hard as we were, and likewise with the other couple of big adventures that I've done, you can get away with eating whatever you want to because you need to put the calories, you need to put the fuel inside you. So I'll eat good. But then I can eat a packet of biscuits, I can eat a packet of crisps, you know, I can eat all the nonsense and the rubbish that would put the weight on because you're burning so much off. Sometimes you just need a bit of rubbish to fill you up, if you know what I mean.
I trained for a marathon once when I was 30, and I remember being insatiable. I was eating all the time.
Boy, I'll say, Pete doesn't usually eat very much, but he was eating extra entire meals when he was training for that marathon.
Now, with all this preparation, this sounds like a full-time job. How did you actually feel during the race and afterwards?
Well, strangely enough, the Seven Marathon Challenge actually changed my life and changed my career. Because up until then, I'd left college and I'd had a few years where, unfortunately, being blind, being over 40, people put you on the scrap heap. You know, oh, we couldn't have a blind man doing this, we couldn't have a blind man doing that. So it's very, very difficult, or was very, very difficult to get work. I did get offered one job, which was I could put screws in a box.
What was your training in college?
I was training wood turning, carpentry. I did braille skills and also some computers. It costs money to put the software down to get a disabled person in work. And I don't care what people say, everybody looks at that cost. And if they can't afford it, you ain't going to get the job. Basically, I was unemployed for a good 4 or 5, maybe even 6 years. And so, although I can't sit idle, I took myself off and I used to do a lot of voluntary work, a lot of fundraising, primarily for guide dogs in those days. So when the heavy training schedule did come, I was able to, because at that time I wasn't holding a full-time job. The training, the fundraising, the volunteering became a full-time job, basically, you know, an unpaid full-time job. But then the 13th of April, as I said, I ran through the finish line. And on the 14th of April, I made the decision to go self-employed. And 2008 was when I went self-employed, and I haven't looked back since. So I work effectively for myself, or as I tell the kids, I work for your mother. And now I've got a fantastic life. I'm never going to become a millionaire. I earn enough to put the food on the table. The kids are right. We have one holiday a year, or, you know, we enjoy a few ice creams every now and again. And I don't need much more.
Have you always been an athlete?
Strangely enough, I used to love athletics at school. My claim to fame when I was at high school, from first year to fifth year, I was the town school's champion at 1,500 metres. I could play football, but I did struggle to see the ball, so I would never get in the school or the town team. But with athletics, I could see enough to run around the track. So I used to enjoy that, and I found, well, I had a passion for it, and I won a few races. But strangely enough, at the age of 16, when my sight levels sort of really started nosediving and it was difficult for me to see white lines and guide runners weren't around so much then, I just had to give up all my sport. I did some weight training just to keep myself fit and press-ups and sit-ups, etc. And then I was, in fact, around 42, 43 when I took up the marathon running again. And I haven't looked back since, you know, so it was obviously still in me to do something.
So now this most recent challenge you did, that had nothing to do with running. You did it all on a bicycle.
Yeah. Well, strangely enough, the first one was 7 marathons, 7 days, 7 continents. And then I did a second one in 2011, which was called the Top to Toe, which was actually a combination. I did 10 marathons in 10 days And incorporated in that was also 700 miles of cycling, which was from the northern point of Britain, which is John O'Groats, to the southernmost point, which is Land's End. And then only 2 weeks ago, I completed another one, which was seven countries, 7 days, 744 miles of cycling from Switzerland back to the UK. So I've gone full circle, really, from running totally to running cycling and then to cycling. So it's been an interesting few years.
And I take it the cycling happens on a tandem bike, a bicycle for two?
Yeah, we've got a tandem. And we've adapted it slightly different as well, Pete. As you know, tandem, front rider, gears, brakes, etc.
That's me.
Yeah.
He claims he's the only one with pedals.
Yeah, we have two tandems ourselves. One is a recumbent and one's an upright.
Fantastic. Well, what happened with the tandem that I had? A good friend who's into cycling says, you're the one who's actually, this is your tandem. I said, yeah. So you really need to ride this to your capability. And I went, oh, yeah, although there's two of us. So why don't we put the gears on the back? So we took the gears off the front of the bike. We put the gears on the back of the bike. So I control the gears and it works. A lot of people went, oh, no. And my mate who rides with me now, Steve, he said, you're not having the steering wheel. He says, and you're not having the brakes. He said, but you can have the gears. And what it does do, it makes us communicate much more. Because obviously I need to know when we're going to sort of hit an hill, when we're going to hit a roundabout or a set of traffic lights or whatever, we're always talking. So that way we feel we get a lot more out of the bike.
Gee, maybe we should have our tandems modified. Nancy only gives me the pedals. I don't get anything else.
I mean, Steve can have the pedals, but I've had to put pedals on the front. I'm sure he don't pedal, you know.
I gave you a horn.
Oh, that's true. I got the horn. I can go,
Oh, fair play. Hey, I tell you what, you know, I've got a bell also on the back. You know, just for a laugh, it's ring, 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 ring. But going across the continent, never realized I would use that bell so much.
Why did you find yourself using the bell more often?
Well, because we were doing a lot more riding on cycle paths on the continent itself, because the motorists out there, they do make it clear when you're on their roads that if it's a cycle path left or right, they want you on it. And then when you're on that cycle path, you find then that you've got people running, you've got people walking, you've got other cycles, you've got cycles that certainly not going the speed we were. And so it's amazing how much attention that bell does bring.
Now for this week's high-tech item, some thoughts on the merits of using technology or not, and also Blind Dave Healy's web presence. So if anybody does want to follow you, what are your Facebook and Twitter names?
The answer to that is, give me 1 second, because I don't have a clue, but I'm going to find out. Just bear with me. Georgie, can you help me? What's my Facebook and Twitter account? What's it called? Do you know what it is?
No.
How can we find out? Can you go on mine and see what it says? Is it just Facebook Blind Dave Healy?
Yeah, I think it's just Blind Dave Healy.
Is it? And on my Twitter?
I'm not sure about that, but probably, yeah.
Okay. But I wouldn't have a clue if you want the honest truth. I'll put my hands up and admit it.
It just shows you it's possible to get by without being a real technically able person.
You're right.
That's a good message for a lot of people, though, because a lot of people just don't deal with technology or don't want to.
And that is it, you see, because I don't want to. I mean, don't get me wrong, I've fallen into a trap now. Once upon a time, I wouldn't give you a thank you for the computer. But what I have and what it has done, it's drawn me in. I've got a laptop, and because my laptop went down last week, all of my telephone numbers are on there, my email addresses, my contacts. It's taught me that basically technology is ruling my life in that sense. But because of the facts, you know, Pete, you understand this, we can't write things down. I can braille, I can use tape recorders, but sometimes it is far easier to actually put the diary and put the contact book as a Word document on the computer, type it in, save it, and it's done. So it has made me very, very idle in that respect, and it has brought me to a degree into the 21st century. But as for the social media, the only way that I can reply is when it pops up on my inbox and it's there and I can reply to that. Otherwise, I have not got a clue.
So the message you were supposed to get and what you were supposed to learn from what happened last week was you should have been backing up.
You see, this again, I relied on someone to, I've got an external hard drive, I'm told, that should have been backing everything up. And for some reason, it's backed majority of it up. So I've, Deb and the eldest have retrieved a lot of stuff, but for some reason, it hasn't retrieved the latter few months of stuff. But at least my telephone book, my contact list and all that is saved, because that's on a Word document, so I haven't got a problem there. But hey, it's taught me a lesson.
So how does your family follow you on all these trips? Do they follow you through some of the social media and Skype?
With the seven marathons, when we were around the world fast and furious, we had a film crew with us and we had guide dogs people with us. So it was a case of feeding things back, and the social media wasn't as big then in 2008, although it was there. But in 2011, Deb actually met us halfway up the country. But it was then that we started using the social media a bit more, and Deb was, you know, putting photographs on and she was putting messages on. We also had a very good friend of mine who was on a motorbike at the front of the parade, and when he was a sort of 10 mile in front, he would blog and do the social media as well. So we used a lot of social media and then Twitter. And for the 7 in 7, which was the most recent one, a friend of mine who drove the mobile home that we slept in, whenever he could, he was taking pictures, silly pictures, you know, all sorts of pictures, sending them back. And Deb was, she hit the social network terrific, you know. She created so much interest through that week. It was absolutely unbelievable.
And what's the URL for your website?
It's www.blinddavehealy, and the Healy is H-E-E-L-E-Y, blinddavehealy.co.uk.
You know, I think one other thing we can learn from Dave is that maybe we're not all masters of technology, as Dave seems to not be a master of all technologies, but he can always find help from other people. And that's why people are around. We all rely on each other in some degree.
Isn't that the truth?
So again, if you missed any of the contact information or links we've given in the show, go to www.eyesonsuccess.net and look for those show notes for this show and other resources.
And we did, in fact, find Dave on both Facebook and Twitter as Blind Dave Healy, but we'll have those links in the show notes as well. That's it for show number 1347. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about the new M-Braille app from Empaya. M-Braille is not just a Braille keyboard for iOS devices, but a full-featured application. You can use it to type, edit, and send text messages and tweets using contracted or uncontracted Braille, and much, much more. We'll talk with its creator, Harry Passanen, about its many capabilities and his plans for the future. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and Audioboo at Eyes on Success, and on Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.